Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. Ms. Larson, can you please take the roll for attendance?
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott?
Present.
Representative Erdahl?
Representative Erdahl will be late.
Thank you. Representative Wasilewicz?
Present.
Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Keeler, have you had a moment to review the minutes from the February 8th meeting?
I did, Madam Chair. I move to approve.
Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Just a quick announcement. Next week, we'll be hearing Representative Erdahl's bill, House File 561, that we ran out of time for on Monday, and we will have him first on the agenda and appreciate him understanding the timing challenges that we ran into. Today, we have two bills on the agenda. We'll be starting with House File 358. Representative Jordan, to your bill, would you like to make a motion to get us set to where we need to be to hear your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that I move that House File, 357, be moved to be re-referred to the Health Committee.
Just want to confirm, is it House File 357 or 358?
358, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. So Representative Jordan moves to re-refer House File 358 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. And I understand that you also have an A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that you'd like. Would you like to present on that, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. The author's amendment was presented after feedback we received from the Disability Law Center and the disability community. This is a very important part of comprehensive and consent-based sex education, that we are not leaving behind students with disabilities in this instruction. So that is what this amendment does, and that is why it's being included.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. You may proceed, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, members of the committee, for the opportunity to present this bill, House File 358, which would ensure that young people across Minnesota have the information they need to make smart decisions about their health, their bodies, and their relationships. Every person makes important decisions daily about their sexual and reproductive health throughout their lifetime. However, Minnesota has no statewide standard for whether essential information about reproductive health, consent, or healthy relationships education is provided in schools. This means that students across school districts receive completely different information about sexual and reproductive health, while others get no information at all. Comprehensive sex education supports healthy youth development by helping young people make smart decisions about their health and relationships by promoting open communication between young people and trusted adults in their life. Comprehensive sex education programs are age and developmentally appropriate, medically accurate, inclusive, and culturally sensitive. And importantly, these programs also teach consent, including respecting others' bodily autonomy, boundaries, and how to say no to unwanted sexual advances. Prevention begins with educating young people about these issues, how to identify them, and how to handle them when they arise. Comprehensive sex education can combat racial inequities. Programs that are culturally appropriate and directly address racial identity can help combat the structural issues that allow racial inequities and health disparities to persist. There's broad support for sex education in the United States. Young people are asking for this information in their schools, and polling shows overwhelming support among parents. With that, Madam Chair, I'm really happy to walk through the bill itself. Is this an appropriate time to actually do the bill walkthrough?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Section 1 relates to the program. It directs MDE in consultation with MDH and other experts to identify one or more model comprehensive programs for elementary and secondary students. They must have a rulemaking process and have a hearing to identify model programs. They must provide school districts and charter schools with access to the model programs, including written materials, curriculum resources, and instructor training by June 1st of 2023. This also requires that the model program be identified by MDE to be medically accurate and age and developmentally appropriate. It also includes topics like human anatomy, reproduction and development, consent, bodily autonomy, healthy relationships, including relationships involving diverse sexual orientations and gender identities. It also provides information around abstinence and other methods for preventing undesired pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections, and the relationship between substance use and sexual behavior and health. Paragraph C defines consent. Paragraph D requires that the model programs include info about inappropriate sexual contact between students and school employees. This also directs districts to implement a comprehensive sex education program starting in the 2023-2024 school year. The program also needs to respect community values, encourage communication with parents and guardians, faith leaders, or other trusted adults, be culturally diverse, inclusive, and respectful, provide students with information about local resources for medically accurate information and services. Those could be related to sexual and reproductive health, dating violence, and sexual assault. It allows allows school districts or charter schools to adopt their own model comprehensive sex education program, which must be approved by MDE. It also requires districts to identify which model program they have selected. And it also allows someone other than a licensed teacher to provide comprehensive sex education instruction. This could be a person already employed by a district or community organization if the school administration determines the non-licensed employee or community organization has necessary and competent expertise. So then Section 2 is a sexual health education report, which requires MDE to submit a report to the education committees on the programs by January 15th of 2024. The report needs to include a description of how the model sexual health education programs were identified, any implementation assistance, number of school districts and charter schools that have adopted each model program, and a list of districts and charter schools that sought approval from MDE for a different model, including any districts that did not receive that approval. It's also important to remember that parents do have curriculum review, and parents can opt their children out of this and any other curriculum provided by schools. With that, Madam Chair, I am happy to turn this over to testimony.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And it looks like you have three testifiers. We'll start with Adriana Perez from Mincasa.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Adriana Perez, the Prevention Program Coordinator at Mincasa, the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Prior to my role at Mincasa, I was an advocate for victims and survivors of sexual abuse, intimate partner violence, and family violence. Mincasa is a statewide coalition of over 75 member programs, allies, and survivors. We are here today to support House File 358 and to thank Representative Jordan, co-authors, and this committee for advancing this conversation. The Center for Disease Control identifies teaching skills such as consent, healthy relationships, healthy sexuality, and empowerment as a best practice for sexual violence prevention. Mincasa supports this as an effective strategy of prevention, which is why this bill is so important. Until things change, one in four girls and one in six boys nationally will be sexually assaulted or abused by the age of 18. Parents, guardians, schools, communities all share a responsibility to use proven strategies to protect all children from sexual violence so young people can build positive, healthy relationships throughout their lives. We have also learned from the 2019 Minnesota Student Survey that a little over 1 in 5 LGBT plus students in grades 9 and 11 have been sexually assaulted or abused, compared to about 1 in 10 non-LGBT plus identifying students in Minnesota alone. So this means that LGBT plus students have experienced sexual assault at twice the rate of their non-LGBT counterparts, which again is why this is so important. These few statistics start to paint a clear picture of what youth are currently experiencing and why prevention education, such as comprehensive sexual health education, is needed. Topics such as healthy relationships, communication skills, consent, setting and respecting boundaries are all part of comprehensive sex ed. These topics help youth develop practical skills so they can make the best and safest choices for themselves. This empowers youth to create healthy relationships that uphold their values and boundaries and teaches them how to respect other people's boundaries as well. It is so important to note that these skills go beyond dating relationships. The more we develop these skills, the healthier all of our relationships will be throughout life, including our friendships, our family relationships, even colleague relationships. Providing comprehensive sex education within schools is the most effective and efficient way to reach Minnesota's youth and reduce perpetration of sexual violence. Statewide, healthy relationship and sex education allows youth to receive consistent messaging and knowledge around healthy relationship skills. Comprehensive sex education will provide youth with the necessary tools for safe, healthy, consenting relationships of all kinds. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Hadija Steen Mills with Family Tree Clinic.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to testify in favor of HF 358. My name is Hadija Steen Mills, and I'm a proud graduate of the University of Minnesota with a degree in human sexuality focused on sexual health and reproductive justice and disparities. In the last 4 years as a sexual health educator, I have taught over 600 hours of comprehensive sexuality education to over 1,000 students in both the Twin Cities and the rural South. While supporting our young people, I have seen firsthand the impact of kindness and compassion. I've also seen that not everyone's experience is the same. According to the 2020 Minnesota Adolescent Sexual Health Report, the rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea are highest among Black and Hispanic youth. The gonorrhea rate is 28 times higher, and the chlamydia rate is 9 times higher among Black youth compared to white youth. The birth rate for American Indian, Hispanic, and Black youth is 7, 4, and 3 times higher compared to white adolescents. The state and the nation have a duty to support our youth and rectify these unjust disparities. The events of 2020 opened many people's eyes to the deep and rooted inequities that are an undercurrent in this country and the world. In the context of Minnesota, the issue is magnified due to the Minnesota paradox. The Minnesota paradox is the phenomenon that Minnesota ranks as one of the best places to live in the nation, but only if you're white. If you're Black, Native American, or a person of color, it ranks as one of the worst. With the declaration of racism as a public health crisis, we have an opportunity. As a state with such different lived experiences and health outcomes, we can live up to our motto, L'Étoile du Nord, and be the star of the North for disparity mitigation. Sexuality encompasses many components, such as gender identity, reproduction, consent, abstinence, healthy relationships, and sexual orientation. These aspects create a through line in the human experience that also compound and interact with other pieces of a person's identities and backgrounds. Disparities do not exist in a silo, and we need to uplift every area impacted by inequity. Comprehensive sexuality education is just another means to disparity mitigation by creating a world where family input is valued, facts are fundamental, and identities are uplifted. HF 358 is one move towards Minnesota being a leader, a lodestar guiding the ship towards a more just future. I strongly support you to vote in favor of HF 358. Thank you for your time and for your dedication to equity.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Ava Collins with the Minnesota Youth Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Richardson and members of the committee, hello, my name is Ava Collins. I am a senior at St. Anthony Village High School, a small public high school located just outside of Northeast Minneapolis. I also serve as the chair of the Minnesota Youth Council Committee, a legislatively mandated organization of young people who advise the state departments and legislature on issues that impact young people. I help to manage my school district's mental health response and serve on the Mental Health Advisory Committee at the Department of Education. In addition to all of these responsibilities, I am currently watching the 2000s teen television drama Dawson's Creek. I won't go on about it, but the show discusses a lot of the issues in young people's lives that they aren't often given credit for handling. Greek drama, and most pertinently, sexuality. The lack of comprehensive sex education and its many intersections does not stop students from engaging in or being exposed to such behaviors. The lack of proper education simply leaves young people and later adults without the knowledge of their autonomy or options. This system perpetuates violence, ignorance, and inadequate health. If it is the school system's responsibility to educate the youth of society about general subjects, vocational aptitude, social mores, and understanding of one's place in the world, it is also the school system's responsibility to teach young people about how to manage their physical bodies in order to holistically round out students as members of society. Speaking to my own experience in the public education system, I can say that the general health education I received was uncomfortable. The culture surrounding conversations like these is currently full of shame and has gone untouched, regardless of the fact that issues of sexually transmitted infections, unplanned pregnancy, sexual assault, and other consequences of ill-informed sexual behavior are prevalent in the lives of young people, not to mention those who never received or sought out the proper education. However, my education was enriched by organizations like the Annex Teen Clinic in Hazelden, organizations that spoke candidly to the issues facing young people, providing students with resources and support in an authentic yet still professional way. I understand that there is opposition to providing students with this education because this matter is deeply personal, but it is also so important for the mental and physical health of individual young people and society as a whole. Knowledge is empowering. Knowledge can keep us safe, and knowledge will keep us healthy. If there is anything that has become pertinent to us over the past year, it is how interconnected every facet of our lives are and how all of it is affected by public health. Comprehensive sexual health and consent education is statistically and scientifically backed by evidence that shows reductions in transmission of STIs, adolescent pregnancy, sexual harassment and violence, and an overall healthier, well-adjusted society. I am in support of House File 358 because I have experienced the dynamics of an education that is not appropriate to the ever-changing society that it exists in. As our conversations turn to be more inclusive and supportive, we must equip our young people with an education that suits their needs and allows them a level of autonomy to enter their adult lives with confidence and respect for others. You have the power to set a standard for the next generations, and I hope that you will choose to empower students in their health. Thank you for hearing the voices of young people and issues that impact them, and I thank you for your time. I yield my time to the chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Members will move on to public testimony and then to member questions. We do have a number of hands currently raised. Abdosh Uni, you'll be our first public testifier on behalf of the Minnesota Department of Education.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. Appreciate the opportunity to testify on this legislation. Representative Jordan and I had the opportunity to connect this morning, so I really appreciate the time early this morning. I know we're not all morning people. I'm certainly not one. I appreciate it. We just had some really kind of a technical input here. We were able to communicate with Representative Jordan about the mission of the legislation to be able to provide the support to create the model program, as well as to provide the support for any type of implementation guidance and technical assistance, as well as the final portion of the bill to be able to provide that support to around the gathering information on the implementation, what models districts are using. We would just need the resources to be able to carry that out. And I think we had a good conversation about that. And then I think, you know, the author, MDE, had some good conversations about the ability to work together to tweak some of the language around some of the expectations set out at the top. around rulemaking and maybe the other laws that exist in statute around MDE creating curriculum rather than necessarily a model program. So we'll work together on tweaking some of that language or at least making sure that we're on the same page around how that functions with the existing statute. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Trinity Hanoff with the Minnesota Youth Council, who is also a junior at St. Michael Albertville High School. And on deck, we will have Julie Quist. Trinity Hanoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for giving me a space to testify in favor of House File 358. Hi, my name is Trinity, and I'm a junior at St. Michael Albertville High School. As a student, it's important to me that sex ed curriculum disseminated in our health classes are inclusive, relevant, and effective, which in the status quo is not the case for many schools across the state, including my own. It is crucial we provide sex ed that pertains to various sexual orientations and identities. Otherwise, those left out are at increased risk for sexually transmitted diseases, sexual violence, and other ignorance-related mishaps compared to the cis heterosexual individuals the curriculum currently caters to. The school system should not deprive students who are considered different the relevant sexual knowledge pertinent to their safety. This bill promotes lesson plan inclusivity for diversified orientations and identities, which levels the playing field for those who previously have been left out of the conversation. I believe protection and safety of young people to be a paramount priority of the state, which can't be achieved when sexual harassment rates are 1 in 5 on college campuses and 83% in our high schools. Teaching students about consent will reduce unwanted sexual encounters by making people aware of what's okay and what's not okay. Knowledge is power, so withholding this precious information from young people isn't doing anyone any favors. We deserve to be taught about consent. We want to be taught about consent. It's our duty to promote safety, and this bill's consent-based education does that. Now, I saw these same problems within my own school's sex ed curriculum. And when I talked to admin about updating it, they assured me it was concurrent with state standards. And they're right, it is. So that's why I realized change is not going to come at a school level. If we want our schools to be better by our students, it's time to update our state standards. We need legislative action, and this bill's comprehensive sex education will do that. And so I urge you committee members to vote in favor of this bill. Thank you. I yield my time to the chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Jordan Quist with the Child Protection League. And on deck, we have Jennifer Oliphant. Julie Quist.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Jordan. My name is Julie Quist with Child Protection League Action. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to House File 358. And we do have more extensive testimony that we submitted in writing. After the same comprehensive sexuality mandate passed in the House on April 23rd, 2019, we distributed tens of thousands of informational literature pieces across the state, and we accepted dozens of requests for speaking engagements in numerous Minnesota communities. Here's what we found. Parents, families, and the community at large were stunned. They wondered why they had no idea or were notified in any way of this pending mandate that would affect their children. Subdivision 2, paragraph 1 of the bill states that the curriculum must respect community values. And our question is, who determines those community values and how are they determined? We can assure you that this mandate does not respect community values we encountered in the many metro and greater Minnesota communities in which we spoke. The meaning of the words used in this legislation can best be understood by looking at comprehensive sexual education curricula that are recommended and used by primary advocates of the program, such as Planned Parenthood, Advocates for Youth, and the Minnesota Department of Education.
30 seconds.
Such as bodily autonomy, diverse sexual orientations and gender identities, and even abstinence, take on specific meaning that isn't immediately evident that when you look at the curriculum, and that alarmed the parents. As we studied the curriculum, we found that it encouraged young people to consider sexual activity as their right, regardless of whether their parents and church teachings attempt to direct them otherwise. Comprehensive sexuality education curriculum sexualizes children, removes protective boundaries, and encourages sexual exploration, with graphic illustrations and descriptions. Oral, anal, and vaginal sex are presented as equivalent options as long as it's done safely, quote unquote.
Time.
Sexual activity is never safe for minors. So Minnesotans do not want this bill, and they won't forget forcing it on them. So members of the committee, please vote no on House File 358. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Dr. Jennifer Oliphant, and on deck, we have Jillian Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Dr. Jenny Oliphant. I work for the Prevention Research Center at the University of Minnesota in the Healthy Youth Development area. I've worked in this area for the past 30 years and have focused on effective approaches to teen pregnancy prevention, healthy sexuality, and ways of promoting resiliency and healthy youth development among our teens. I want to talk to you about two areas where we have lots of information from science. First, medically accurate, responsible sex education in the schools is supported by the overwhelming majority of Minnesota parents, not just Minnesota adults. We completed a statewide survey of 1,600 parents of children and youth, sampled across 8 congressional districts, asking parents what they would like to see taught in public schools. As detailed in our article in the Journal of Adolescent Health, Minnesota parents want children to receive encouragement to abstain from sex, and they want them to receive accurate information about birth control, family planning, condoms, and prevention of pregnancy and sexually transmitted infection. 90% or more of parents support this, and this cuts across political orientations, religious preferences, gender, education, and income level. It's unusual to see this level of concurrence in a survey, and these results reflect the findings we see from parent surveys in other parts of the country as well. Secondly, I believe it's very important to understand this question, the question that we are often most asked from parents, legislators, and the media. They ask, how does medically accurate sex education affect our kids when schools use rigorously tested and evaluated curricula? What happens? This is what we know. The impact of this kind on sex education includes delays in age of first intercourse, increased proper use of condoms and contraception among sexually active adolescents, fewer sexual partners over time, lower rates of pregnancy, abortion, and birth. Based on the current scientific evidence and other forms of sex education that only discuss abstinence and that include medically inaccurate information in healthy behavior, we know that that comprehensive sex education works.
Time.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Oliphant. And if there was more that you had to say, you can definitely submit written testimony as well. Up next, we have Jillian Nelson with the Autism Society of Minnesota. And on deck, we have Pony White. Jillian Nelson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jillian Nelson, and I am the Community Resource and Policy Advocate for the Autism Society of Minnesota. I am a member of the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities, the State Rehabilitation Council, and the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities. I am here today to ask for your support for House File 358. In my role at AWSM, I receive countless calls from parents and adults desperate to find a resource for a class for sexual education. Sometimes it's because parents are worried about vulnerability or that their teen has the information to make healthy relationship choices. Sometimes it's because adults are learning that they didn't get the information on how their bodies work or what boundaries look like, and they just ended another abusive relationship. These calls hit far too close to home for comfort. You see, I too am an autistic adult, a person with a disability. As a special education student, I did not receive any sexual education in school. I did not learn about consent or healthy relationships or my body or how to keep myself safe and healthy. I have learned those things since, through mistakes that cost me dearly in trauma and dignity, instead of learning them in a classroom. Sexuality is a natural and healthy part of being a human. All humans have a right to their sexuality and to express this in a safe and comfortable way. In my community, autistic children and adults experience disproportionately high rates of victimization, including sexual assault, in comparison to our non-autistic peers. A lack of sexual education has been shown to be one factor related to increased risk of victimization.
30 seconds.
Autistic adults are less likely to receive information related to sex education. Here in the United States, students with disabilities are promised a free and appropriate public education. I would argue that restricting access to comprehensive and appropriate sexual education that would prevent victimization and sexual assault and encourage consent and healthy choices is depriving us of the education appropriate to our long-term well-being. Sex ed is not a pep rally to encourage sexual activity. It is, in fact, a necessary conversation to make healthy, mindful choices. It is a tool to teach us our rights and responsibilities when it comes to our bodies. It is a chance to give students the necessary information to avoid poor choices that lead to victimization and trauma. It is an undeniable step to ending the legacy of sexual trauma, not just for students with disabilities, but for all future generations. I thank you for your time and encourage your support for House File 38, and I yield my time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Pony White, Advocates for Youth. And on deck, we have Dan Buck.
Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Pony White. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a co-leader of the Minnesota Youth Activist Alliance of Advocates for Youth and a member of the Young Women's Cabinet appointed by Governor Tim Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Before I begin, I want to share that my statement includes mentions of sexual violence and child abuse. As a young person who has advocated for comprehensive sexual education courses on my college campus and went on to teach and facilitate comprehensive sexual education for people ages 10 to 22, I'm here today in support of Bill HF 358, which would ensure a comprehensive, age-appropriate, and medically accurate sexual education curriculum for all public schools throughout our state. In 2004, at the age of 4 years old, I was repeatedly sexually molested by a family member who my mom entrusted to watch me as she worked. This family member was 13 at the time. They were going through puberty, but lived in a home with strict ethnic guardians who would tell them false information about sex and their bodies. I remember hearing my cousin being told if a boy hugged her, she would get pregnant. I remember her abuse as much as I remember the abuse she inflicted upon me trying to figure out her body and understand herself. I was a victim of assault, and at the age of 4, all I knew was that if I talked about sex or things that were happening to my body, I would be punished, so I never said anything. By the age of 14, adults were just starting to truly talk to me about sex and safety. While I appreciate in my education, I couldn't help but think I've spent my entire life playing many of those moments in my head and being triggered by sexual comments and fearing all forms of intimacy. By the age of 15, I was finally able to forgive my abuser in my own way by realizing the abuse she inflicted on me was very much a result of sex shaming and lack of education she received. My experience gave me the voice to challenge the culture I grew up in that taught children to fear their bodies, a lesson that only enables sexual predators and perpetuates generations of sexual violence. Across the board, young people between age 15 to 24 and people of color are disproportionately affected by STDs. Women's Fund Minnesota documents that 8% of 11th grade girls in Minnesota report sexual abuse inside or outside of their family at some point in their life. I share all of these statistics, and there are so many other statistics I can list to express that what occurred to me at 4 years old was not a special case. I was not the exception of what happens when we teach our children false information. Instead, I was one of the million examples of why our current system does not work. When sexuality is approached with silence and shame, young people face gender-based violence, increased risk of unintended pregnancy, sexually transmitted infections, unhealthy relationships, and bullying and discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender young people. Quality sex education includes information about sex, sexuality, relationships, consent, contraception, and condoms, and how to protect yourself and plan for your future. I believe that House File 358 will ensure that for all Minnesota youth from Metro Minnesota throughout Greater Minnesota. So in closing, I would like to urge the committee to support HF 358. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for sharing your story with us today. Up next, we have Dan Buck with Outfront.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dan Buck. I work in the Education Equity Department of Outfront, Minnesota. I'm here to advocate for sex education in Minnesota school system and for it to include our LGBTQ students. Formal sex education varies in content across schools, and studies have demonstrated that comprehensive sexuality education programs reduce the rates of sexual activity, sexual risk behaviors, such as the number of partners and unprotected intercourse, STIs, and adolescent pregnancy. The same study compared risk activity in students who received sex education versus students who received abstinence only, and it showed no increase in at-risk activities in students receiving comp sex education. LGBTQ youth are negatively impacted as a result of many factors. For LGBTQ youth, social stigma around their sexual choices or identities can be particularly difficult. Stigma comes across in many forms, such as discrimination, harassment, family disapproval, social rejection, and violence. This puts LGBTQ youth at increased risk for certain negative health outcomes. For example, disproportionately higher rates of sexually transmitted diseases. Lesbian, bisexual females are more likely to have ever been pregnant than their heterosexual peers, and transgender youth are more likely to have attempted suicide than their cisgender peers. As a bisexual kid, I was left out of the conversation because adults were uncomfortable. This uncomfortable feeling by people who should have been watching out for us put me at risk. By leaving a population out of the conversation, you leave them uninformed and at risk because they don't have access to information that can protect them. It creates stigma around their sexual health and leaves them afraid to ask questions. You cannot stop them from having sex. What you need to do is give them information that allows for safer decision-making and should not be put in terms of who is having sex, male, female, transgender, but that it is happening and that there are ways to be safer about it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else logged on to the Zoom meeting who wishes to speak for or against the bill? Hearing none, we will move on to member questions. We have, I think, 8 hands currently raised. We'll start with Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions or a question and a comment for Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan, I've had almost 4,000 emails in the last 4 days opposing House File 358. And although, you know, I don't know where they all come from, I believe they're coming from parents. And I believe parents are, you know, one of the biggest stakeholders, you know, in this decision, in this bill. So can you tell me what kind of time you've spent talking to parents about this, and not just in your own backyard, but around the state?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Poston, for the question. I've received some emails, too. There's no way to verify where they're coming from, and they seem to be, unfortunately, pretty miscommunicated with about what comprehensive sex education is and what this bill is. And I'd agree with you that parents are one of the most important people that shape our values around health education, around relationships, around what's right and wrong, and that's why parents are included in this. This kind of work and comprehensive sex education programs show that teach children that parents are important values for them. It also says that they should talk to their parents and ask them questions. But this is also something that's very favored by parents. And so I think perhaps Dr. Oliphant could talk a little bit about the number of parents she's talked to about this and what their responses has been, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Dr. Oliphant.
Thank you for the question. So we have provided some written materials that can help you direct you towards that information. But our survey was a statewide survey across multiple districts and done in a scientific survey manner. And again, as I said before, our parents of the 1,600 parents of children and youth that were sampled were in support of comprehensive sexual health education.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up, I guess. Representative Jordan, I think I just went over 4,000 because my my phone is just sitting there dinging with more and more messages coming in. And you're right, you don't know where they come from. But I've spent some time talking to parents up in my neck of the woods. And the comment that I get is they don't disagree with sex education. They disagree or they don't like how far this goes. I had a lot of them reference the book, It's Perfectly Normal to Me, and some of the things that are in that publication for a 10-year-old. And I get the feeling that they're just disgusted by that, that this just goes too far for people that are too young. What are your thoughts on that?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. And thank you, Representative Poston, for the question. One thing that's really important in this bill is that it directs instruction that is age appropriate. Age appropriate means that different ages are taught different things that are important for them to know. There's nothing in here that says we need to be showing pornography to a 10-year-old. That would be abhorrent. And I don't know anything about where in this bill it mentions it's perfectly normal, but that's not mentioned.
Oh, it doesn't.
So I think it's really important that we remember that this bill provides for age-appropriate information.
Okay. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for the author, Representative Jordan, this bill appears to, of course, provide another unfunded mandate onto local schools. The content of it, I think, is abhorrent. But beyond that, have you considered what the fiscal impact is going to be around the state? Have you worked to secure a local impact note? Have you looked at what the local impact note information that we might have had from the horrible bill from 2 years ago said? So what is this going to cost local schools? And does this make the problem that was communicated to us by superintendents in the last education meeting we had this morning, where they said they needed more money, does this make it better or exacerbate the situation for them?
I will remind everyone that we are in the policy committee and that fiscal impacts will be addressed within the finance committee. So we've got we've definitely have an opportunity for fiscal impact to be addressed within the education finance committee.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll restate my question then, and I've got one more behind it then as well, if I can.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Jordan, have you done a survey of school districts around the state and asked them if they are in favor of accepting more unfunded mandates from the state legislature, directing them what to do?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Drazkowski, for your question. I will reiterate what Chair Richardson said, that this is an education policy committee. But actually, Representative Drazkowski, I agree with you. I don't support unfunded mandates. I think this is a bill that I've requested a fiscal note for, and if it passes, we need to pay for this. We need to give MDE the resources they need to get this right. It's important that we're funding our schools. It's important that we're giving our schools resources to do things right. So I wouldn't want this to pass if the state wasn't willing to pay for it, and I think we should be willing to do so. This is going to education and finance if it makes it that far, and it's an area where we will be addressing the fiscal needs of this bill.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Jordan, the question is very much policy direct. As a matter of fact, it's always policy that is kicked down to our school districts that brings about the unfunded mandate locally. So very much in germane to the efforts of the policy committee. Madam Chair and Representative Jordan, the other question revolves around the piece in the bill that said that waives the licensure requirements. Now, I'm not a person who's in favor of a lot of licensure, but we have it in education, and we have it in pretty well every area of education. If we are not going to require licensure in every other area to be an algebra teacher or a science teacher or a geography teacher, why in the world would we not require licensure in an area as sensitive and controversial as this bill is?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Drozdowski. We have quite a few different kinds of licensure, and we do allow people to teach in our schools that are not licensed in that particular area. I think that's an area of the bill that if you have ideas about that, I would be willing to work with you on. But I think we've heard from a number of people who are positioned to be educators in this area. We heard really compelling testimony from Ms. Dean Mills, for example. I don't know if she wants to talk a little bit about what the differences in the education she provides versus what's typical to schools or not, but perhaps she could give us a little bit of insight into that area.
Ms. Dean Mills.
Sure, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, so I have a degree in human sexuality, and it focuses on, like I said, reproductive justice and disparities. And in my degree, I got to really, really hone into not only teaching best practices, but also really the nitty-gritty kind of things that you're talking about that actually a lot of teachers don't feel comfortable talking about. So I take that burden off of them so they can focus on other aspects of health, like mental health, gym, PE, and I meet my students where they're at, and I'm able to talk through the really hard things, the things that they might not want to talk to their PE teacher about. And because I'm trained in things like trauma-informed best practices, harm reduction approaches, and motivational interviewing, it's something that I'm really exceptionally primed to be able to do, even though I don't have a teaching license. In fact, I'm so primed that I'm one of the only regional facilitators for certain comprehensive sexuality education curricula within the Midwest. So licensure or not, there's ways that we can really, really uphold and support our teachers. Thank you,
Ms. Dean Mills. Representative Drozdowski.
So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Dean Mills and Representative Jordan. Members, I see a lot of inconsistency here. We heard it brought forward in testimony that according to one testifier, that they really wanted to have curriculum that was well vetted and had a strong track record. Madam Chair, if you're not a licensed teacher, how do you even know how to use curriculum to begin with? Would be one of the questions if you haven't gone through the training. I just see that there is a carve out here for some reason. I can't imagine the people the Democrats are going to bring to teach us horrible stuff to kids, but Madam Chair and Representative Jordan, the answer to your question would be, if you want to work on it, get rid of that provision in the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Jordan, would you like to respond?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I really resent the idea that we're teaching horrible things and that Democrats are putting people into position. This bill provides for MDE, the Minnesota Department of Education, to provide these programs and to work with districts on programs that are relevant to their communities. There are a lot of provisions in here that MDE can create these programs, or that school districts themselves have the abilities to create these programs in consultation with MDE. So I'm not sure that Representative Drozdowski has a very good understanding of what this bill actually does, and so maybe we can work a little bit together on that.
Representative Feist.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could, I do understand the bill, Madam Chair. I've read the bill. We are providing a mandate in the bill onto local school districts to teach this comprehensive sex education to kids. And a lot of parents, thousands and thousands around the state, find it repulsive that our government is going to come in and teach this particular area. And that's the controversy we have. We will debate this vigorously on the House floor. It will pass. The Democrats will bring their very radical language forward and make it pass again, and it will not pass this session. Instead, we should be trying to figure out how to get through COVID-19 and get our kids back in school. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drozdowski. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that as a mother and a legislator and a representative for my district, I strongly support this legislation for all of the reasons that our testifiers discussed. And as Ms. Kalenze is in my district, actually, so thank you for coming. And I just think that, you know, Dr. Oliphant had a lot of good points about the general support by parents for this bill. And I just am really grateful to Representative Jordan for bringing this before the committee. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I had a couple of questions. First, to the bill's author, if I might. What are the goals for outcome of this bill on comprehensive sex education?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we heard a lot about the goals. These goals are about making sure that our young people understand what consent is, when it, how to give it, how to receive it, and why it's important. Other bills about other goals of this legislation are to have programs that our districts and charter schools can use in consultation with MDE, so that all of our students and young people have an understanding of their bodies, have an understanding of healthy relationships, and know what they and have the tools they need to navigate those subjects.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer to the bill's author. Well, I don't see anything in this bill that measures those outcomes. And certainly, if we're going to be trying to rein in some of the things you just mentioned, Representative Jordan, I would hope that amongst those also, since this is about health and this is going to the Health Committee next, that you would be concerned about physical health, too, the reduction of STDs, the reduction of teen pregnancy, those sorts of things. And the data that I've seen say that comprehensive sex education does not make any difference in those areas. But at least I would recommend that you put a reporting mechanism in the bill so that those things can be measured, so that we can see, you know, if this is ever implemented, to see if it's actually working. And I guess I want to just agree with Representative Drazkowski that earlier in the week we heard a bill from you, Representative Jordan, all about kind of doubling down on support for teachers' unions and teachers. And then we have a bill here where you're going to allow non-licensed teachers into the classroom. I find it very, very interesting that you would be on both sides of that issue. I wanted to talk a little bit about the cultural sensitivity that's mentioned in this bill. And if you could elaborate on what exactly, give some examples of what might be culturally sensitive topics and how they would be approached in your ideal.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, to just clear up some information, it's actually not true that comprehensive sex education leads to more sexual activity. In fact, it's quite the opposite. I think it's interesting. I actually am very interested in the idea of measurement around this, and hopefully this bill does have a report on implementation from MDE, but it is interesting about the idea of seeing what and how we could measure in lower instances of teenage pregnancy and STI rates. So if you have any ideas around that, please let me know about that. And in terms of what examples of culturally competent education, maybe we could talk a little bit to some of the other educators on this. So perhaps Dr. Oliphant or even Ms. Steen Mills again. I don't know if you have examples of how, or even I think Ms. White had some examples of culturally sensitive examples of this. So I don't know if any of you three have some examples for Representative Scott.
Dr. Oliphant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. In comprehensive sexual health education, one of the best parts about it is that it provides some flexibility for communities to decide what is culturally specific to their communities. We have examples of national and local curriculum, for instance, that have been focused on our Native American youth and providing sexual health education within the context of Native American culture. That is one of the many examples where communities can take what is written at a national level, has been reviewed on a national level, and be used in a community where it is applicable. That is just one example.
Ms. Dean Mills, anything to add?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing I would add is it's really about teaching approach, and this is one of the things that we get to do when we do train educators, is we really talk to them and train them on how to talk about values, and that there's a range of values, and that we refer them to refer the young person to an adult who's like family or somebody that they trust, whether that be a parent, whether that be a guardian, whether that be clergy, whether that be their mom, somebody that they trust and can really talk to them about those specific values and their specific culture, because it's not our responsibility and it's not our job to teach them those values. That comes from home.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, that it comes from home, but that's not what this bill's doing. It's coming from the government-run schools. I guess to the Ms. Steen Mills, so you mentioned the imam. So what would you think would be the best approach to talk to, especially young Islamic Muslim women, about Muslim girls, about female genital mutilation? How would that be handled under CSE?
That's a great question.
Ms. No, you're good. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So CSE, Comprehensive Sexual Education, it's based in teaching the facts in a range of topics and facts about sexual health. As somebody who was raised in a Muslim household, I know very well that folks who are Muslim women, don't exist in a monolith. So I can't speak to all Muslim women or all Muslim faiths, but I will say how I would answer it in a classroom is I would define what female genital mutilation is in an age-appropriate manner. And then I would refer a young person, if they were to ask me about it, to their family, to their imam, to folks that they trust within their community. And I would also refer them to anybody within their school district, such as a counselor, to answer any further questions if they had questions that felt appropriate for that kind of interaction. So I would ask the fact-based portion. If, let's say, a question came up where I was caught a little bit off guard, I would be honest with that young person. I would say, you know what, I'm not an expert in this particular topic, say female genital mutilation, but you know what, I will find you some factual information. I will find you a definition of what that is. But in the meantime, here's some references that you can go to and some referrals for folks you can talk to, because my job is to teach fact and not values.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have one last question for that specific testifier, but I just wanted to point out that, you know, with all the language in this bill that talks about, you know, getting input from the communities, I mean, it depends on what that, whose input you're getting from that community, because that can vary, of course. But we already have something set up right now where the local communities are the ones that determine what goes into a sex education curriculum. And that's the way it should be. This shouldn't be state mandated. So my final question for Ms. Mills, or I don't see her on the screen right now, but I don't think I got that last name right. Steen Mills, I guess I did write it down. So your job is just to tell the facts. So if an 8-year-old came to you with a question about FGM, who would you refer her to right away? And what would be age appropriate for a 9-year-old with that question? Because maybe she has an older sister that's already experienced something like this. And so I'm just wondering what would be age appropriate. Thank you.
Ms. Steen Mills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate your dedication to communities who may experience FGM. I will say, in all of my experience as a sexual health educator, I've never had that brought up, nor have I had an 8-year-old bring that question up to me. So that would be a time where I would pause, because I would want to make sure that I was bringing up an age-appropriate reflection and an age-appropriate definition for that young person. I would probably take that question back to my colleagues who are also experts in the field. And then in the meantime, I would refer them to folks within their school system to be a source of input. But because CSE does have multiple contacts with young folks, I wouldn't just leave it there. That wouldn't be the end of our conversation. I would be able to come back the next day, or let's say if it's on a Friday, on a Monday, and I'd be able to talk to that student some more and be a continued point of contact for that young person and get them the answers that they deserved and needed that were based in fact and not in my opinion because I felt flustered. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hassan, Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to set the record straight that FGM is a thing of the past, and it's not Islamic thing. I think people are mixing culture and religion. There are cultures within the Islamic religion and within the African countries that practice FGM. And FGM is not a thing that exists today. Yes, there are people that live in rural areas that still practice this, but I really want people to know that it's, every time people bring Islam and FGM, I think you're missing the point that there is nothing in Islam that practices FGM. FGM is a culture, it's tradition that some communities have. So please educate yourself and do not mix the two. Islam does not practice. Muslims do not practice FGM. It's tradition in some communities. I just want to set the record straight. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hassan addressed some of the things I wanted to say. I do think we need to be careful when we are asking questions about cultures and communities that we are not steeped in information or insight in. I also think that leads to another point I want to raise. I think Representative Drakowski raised the issue around licensure. Well, it's been a few years now since we have a tier licensure program that I think eliminated the issue that you're concerned about. We do have teachers at the tier one level and some at the tier two level that don't have pedagogy training. So they don't have that training that you were referring to that you were concerned about for them to deliver this information. But what I could tell you is that we do want to make sure we have subject matter expertise doing this type of work with our students. I think everyone can agree with that. And then I'll just say that, you know, I think this bill, the way it's laid out, it provides for communities to have specific curriculums that are geared toward and tailored for their particular students in their particular community. And I would hope that every community, when they're doing this, that they do have subject matter expertise, as well as people that are culturally aware, so that we don't have any type of conversations that are inappropriate for those cultures or offensive, as I believe what's happening today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, can I respond to Representative Frazier?
Oh, one moment. Sorry about that, Representative Bennett. Representative Jordan, please do.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Hassan and Representative Frazier, for your words. I think this is a good example of one of the reasons why we need this bill. This is a complex and topic that we need to have experts who are trained in how to handle questions like this. We don't want our students to associate their bodies with shame. We don't want them to have misconceptions. And that's why we need educators to be able to provide this information to students in a shame-free and facts-based setting. So I think this is a really good example of the sort of conversations that a trained educator in comprehensive sex education and consent can really give to our students to avoid misconception and harm down the road. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a comment, and then I do have a question for the bill author. But I just want to add, and I'm like Representative Poston, I have received thousands of emails in the last 48 hours of parents who are very concerned, and many of them are my local constituents, very concerned about this bill. And this, it's because this isn't just an academic issue. This is an issue that crosses moral, cultural, and religious values. And that's why we have always left this to local control. And as much as this bill says we're going to be sensitive to the local cultures and things, this is a massive power grab. It's an arrogant power grab of state government, of parental authority. And that's wrong in my mind. This belongs in the hands of parents. It's a very sensitive issue with morally held beliefs that belongs directed at the local level. So I do have a question for Representative Jordan. But Representative Jordan, can you give me examples, please, of other areas of curriculum where the Department of Education is going to have to approve locally adopted curriculum or instructional materials, and also why you chose that for this particular area of curriculum?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Bennett, for the question. It's important to know that schools do and districts do still have that local control. If a district finds that they do not like one of the programs offered by MDE, they may create their own in consultation with MDE. As for other areas with this kind of programming, perhaps Mr. Uni could answer Representative Bennett's question.
I'm sorry, I missed the name, Representative Jordan.
Mr. Uni from the Minnesota Department of Education.
Oh, Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Jordan, my apologies. I missed the exact question. If you could just repeat it for me briefly.
Would you like to restate that, please?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just wondering if I can have examples of where else in our curriculum that the Commissioner of Education is required to approve locally adopted curriculum or instructional materials.
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, this is, as I understand it, the model program that we're going to be creating or under this bill, and that was the clarification I was saying, was not necessarily be curriculum, and it would be programming that they would do. We would not necessarily be, as I understand it, be approving the exact books that they use, looking at lesson plans, how they deliver the content. But in other areas, we do provide technical assistance to districts that are looking to see how they implement the standards correctly. So we do provide technical assistance in that area, and we have expertise in that process. So in terms of approving exact curriculum, I don't know if that's exactly what the bill is asking us to do, and we don't approve curriculum, but we do provide assistance to districts if they say, do the items that we're using to deliver these standards actually deliver these standards and benchmarks?
Madam Chair. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Uni. And as I read the bill, it basically says that if a school district does not choose the state suggested a curriculum from their particular list, then if a local choice is made, that has to be approved by the Department of Education. And to my knowledge, I don't believe we have any other area in our curriculum instruction where the Commissioner of Education has to approve local curriculum like that. So I guess if my understanding is not correct, then I'd ask the bill author to maybe elaborate on that. But that's the understanding I have, is that if the state approved curriculum is not chosen and a district chooses to write their own curriculum or choose something else, then that particular curriculum or instructional material has to be approved by the Commissioner of Education.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, and thank you, Representative Bennett. I think, well, what I heard Mr. Uni say is that the state does not provide direct curriculum, but rather provide standards. And I think this is a very similar instance of that as well.
Representative Bennett.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, but I guess I don't have the bill language right in front of me, but I will say that the bill language does state differently, and it starts something that we have really never done in our state. So I guess I would ask the bill author to look at that a little more carefully and help us understand that. Probably not right now, but that's not what the language says. And I'm going to just reiterate and state again that this is a power grab against parental authority. And it belongs at the local level so that parents and local teachers and administrators can choose what's best for their students. They should not be directed by the state level except the basic requirements that we have now. There's too much at stake here and too many different types of religious and cultural and other values that are involved to have the state direct this in such a way that takes it out of the hands of parents. So thank you.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to reiterate and go back to what we do, parents can opt their children out of this curriculum, just like they can opt their children out of other curriculum in schools. This doesn't subvert the role of parents. And in fact, I think that this education system, as has been presented by myself and many of the other actual educators on this call, really emphasizes the importance of parents and other trusted adults. As much as I wish every child had parents that they could go to and turn to for information, that is not the case, unfortunately. As we've heard from these young people, both in letters and on this call today, they've testified that they need this information. They haven't had an opportunity to get it at home, and they have suffered as a result. So I'm hoping that we can listen to these students and these parents that are asking for the state to take this on. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Adelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill. Actually, I just want to address Representative Bennett's question. Actually, I had a piece of legislation last year that dealt with vaping prevention, and actually there was model curriculum that the state already had, and we did reference that, but schools were also able to tweak it, that programming, to meet their community's needs. But to the point of, I mean, what we're talking about here, is national health standards, essentially, for the most part, right? We don't have them in the state of Minnesota. So every year we're talking about an education committee. Should we do vaping prevention? Should we do sexual education, comprehensive sex ed? I mean, the reality is the goal of health is to make sure that our young people have the knowledge and the skill to be successful in this world. Yes, do we have different moral values on what that looks like? Sure. But should we have this discussion? Absolutely. Because if we do not, then we put our kids at risk. Now, maybe it's not, you know, Representative Bennett, a lot of your constituents emailed me too, but I'll tell you what, Edina actually agrees with it. And I'm looking at the documentation that was provided to the committee. It looks like the University of Minnesota, one of our leading research hospitals, or sorry, research universities, it is our research university, says right here from the Division of General Pediatrics and Adolescent Health that they recommend it. So when are we going to start listening to our experts on what is best for our kids, I guess, is the frustration here, because I do remember the House floor debates, and I do remember a lot of the same things that are being brought up in this committee that were brought up on the House floor last year. It is an important piece of legislation. As a parent, my community supports it. I support it, and I thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Adelson. It looks like we're going to have to reschedule Representative Scott's House file 351. We will have a vote certain at 2:25, and we'll continue with our member questions as we still have a number of member hands that are up. Representative Bow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a just kind of a general statement, and then a couple of questions for the author, if I could, if we have time. The statement is this: Dr. Jennifer Oliphant mentioned that 61% of 1,600 parents surveyed, I believe it was, wanted sex education covering abstinence and birth control and such. However, I would say most of the parents that I've talked to in my district might welcome that too, but they're concerned about other aspects that are in this bill, which is gender and alternative lifestyles and alternative sexual education or orientation and things like that. So it's more than just the basic things that you mentioned in your comment. And I don't know if you want to respond to that before I go to my two questions of the author.
Representative Jordan, any response?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I'm not really sure what Representative Bow means by alternative lifestyles, but I think one of the most important parts of comprehensive sex education is knowing about gender identity. I know I was never taught about, I was never taught that there was anything other than a heteronormative view of relationships. And I think it's really important that students who come from different backgrounds see that these are loving relationships. These are important. They're worthy of love if they have a different gender identity than the one they were assigned at birth. I think that's incredibly important. And I think it's important for our mental health too. A number of our students, and I believe Mr. Buck testified that they needed to see this. And this is where we've heard in this committee and in other committees, we've heard so many responses about students' mental health and how they're asking for this. I noticed in the Reimagine presentation from AMSD that one of the number one things that students wanted to know about were racism, and they were also about LGBTQ issues, because these aren't issues that students are facing in schools. So I wonder if perhaps Mr. Buck from Outfront Minnesota can talk a little bit about this and why, in his role as an education coordinator, this is so important for students to see.
Mr. Buck, can you address that briefly?
Boy, that's a lot. Simply put, LGBTQ kids are not leading some sort of deviant lifestyle. We're not, sex ed bills do not teach some sort of lifestyle. We are who we are, and we're human beings, and we deserve treated as such. And studies have shown many times when you respect a child's pronouns, when you respect their identity as a trans person and respect that, that you reduce the risk of suicide, depression, and other mental health issues. So this is a matter of human rights and equality. This isn't a matter of how somebody may feel about being taught in a classroom, because homosexuality is not taught. It's who people are, and people need to accept that. Children understand that in the classrooms and the teachers I've talked to, and the educators and the GSAs, there's been overwhelming support for each other as students. And it's time for the adults to get on the bandwagon here and provide safe, comprehensive sex education that teaches safe interactions between two human beings, regardless of who they are, how they represent, what their pronouns are.
So members, I'll just make a quick time note. We've got 10 minutes and six hands. Representative Bull.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So really, this is a great segue into my one of my two questions, which is age appropriate. You know, 1.15 says the model program must include medically accurate instruction that is age appropriate. And certainly that's knocking on the door of this subject, I think. But the question I have is, as determined by whom for age-appropriate nature?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so we're all clear here, that age has nothing to do with gender identity or sexual orientation. It is appropriate, and children see different sorts of families at all ages. So having tools to see what a loving relationship is, regardless of the gender of the people in those relationships, is age appropriate and important for students of all ages. And as far as who determines what is age appropriate, that would be something that I think we would lean quite a bit on MDE for, and for our trained comprehensive sex educators.
Representative Ball.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One last question. 3.12 talks about parental review, and my question is, will schools notify parents about parental curriculum review requirements as outlined in 120B-20? I think a lot of parents are woefully unaware of this, and I'm wondering if schools will be required to reach out and let parents know that that is an option.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that would be something that I would ask MDE to clarify, but I know when I have talked to parents that they are notified of this. And this is something that I know other schools do, and it's done pretty consistently across Minnesota. But I think one of the issues with the way our sex education is implemented across Minnesota is that it's inconsistent. So we do need some of these consistency guidelines so parents are aware of what's being taught, and that educators, and that everyone is having that consistent education. I think Ms. Kalenzi really mentioned about the inconsistency that she had heard versus some of her other classmates had heard. I would also encourage Representative Bowen and every member of this committee to read the extreme wealth and the really well thought out, really well written, and very personal letters from youth across the state of Minnesota as to the inconsistencies and some of the real harm that's been done with the way this has been taught before.
Representative Bowen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just be brief because I think there were lots of hands up before mine. I just want to speak to sort of the outcry of how this is going to affect the children, as if comprehensive sex education is going to traumatize children before they're ready. And I would push back on that. Think about all the children that don't get this from their home, from their parents, from adults that they trust. Maybe they're LGBTQ and they're just trying to find their way through it and navigate all of the systems that work against them, and they are not having any of the correct information from any reliable sources. And so I think if we're going to make the argument that this is going to traumatize children, think about the children.
Representative Berg, I think we may have lost your audio there. So we will move on to Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And quickly, I still have questions about who gets to decide what is age appropriate. Kids mature differently. And so I know that an answer has been given, but I still remain concerned about that answer. Will there be research to ensure to ensure that children who take this course have better lives. We represent Jordan can answer. How are we going to know that those who get this education have better lives than those who get it in the traditional way?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the University of Minnesota has done some research on this, and they have shown that the differences that a more conventional or abstinence-based sex education program has had result as opposed to a comprehensive sex education program. But I think Representative Scott brought up a really great point that maybe we should look into ways to measure this, perhaps in STI rates or teen pregnancy rates. Luckily, teen pregnancy nationwide has gone down, but unfortunately, the United States still has some of the highest rates of teen pregnancy among developed countries across the world. So it's really important that we're looking at that and examining why. The other, you know, really alarming statistic for me was that that this is a huge problem in diverse communities, but also in rural communities. You know, I grew up in this might surprise people on this committee, but I grew up in a township, and I grew up in a town of 800 people. And I knew many people and I did not receive any sort of comprehensive sex education or consent education. And I knew many people who did not understand how pregnancy occurred and as a result had unplanned teen pregnancies. And I think that's something that everyone on this committee agrees is something that the legislature should address and make sure that we have programs in place to prevent this. This is something that we want people to have we want people to have options and know the facts about families and parenting and relationships in their bodies, and we can teach that through comprehensive sex education.
Representative Erdahl, any final thoughts or questions?
Well, Justin, I still have concerns. I have concerns about the development of the curriculum and how this is going to be taught. I see other areas in our standards where we don't seem to care so much about curriculum. I mean, I could mention civics, but I won't. There are a lot of things in here that are concerning that I think still have to be figured out. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First to you, Madam Chair. I hope if MDE is going to work with Representative Jordan on some adjustments, that this bill returns to education policy so that we can then again review those changes as members of policy. So I respectfully ask that you consider that very strongly. And then my questions to Representative Jordan, if I may.
Representative Erickson, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jordan, right now, our main concern, I believe, is reopening our schools, getting our children back into the classroom. You know, we have almost a million children who have suffered because of closure of our schools to face-to-face learning. So tell me how this bill helps us reopen our schools.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Erickson, for the question. I must say I like your outfit today. We must have had a similar wavelength with our gold and black. But this bill is not one that is related to school openings. The other thing I will just mention to you, as many people on this committee know, is that students are still learning. We've seen learning loss. And as we've all heard from students, that their mental health is really in a very tragic spot right now. We've heard from a number of testifiers here that a lack of information about relationships, a lack of information about consent is also contributing to plummeting mental health concerns for students. This is something that is important for students now because their mental health needs this. I have been incredibly alarmed by the stories I've heard from students both on this call and from students that I've heard in other committees, in both this committee and in Education Finance, about how they are asking for mental health resources. And this is a bill that does this. This is a bill that helps students see that they are enough, that they are worthy of love, and that they shouldn't be ashamed of themselves or their bodies.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Jordan, of course we're concerned about their mental health issues, and they need to be in school probably to receive those helps, because that is the main source we have for all of our children. So, I just don't understand why this bill is so important at this time when our focus needs to be on that. But, to go to a more specific point about what's in law already, We have 121A.23, and I'm not going to read it to you. You all should read it. But, you know, it's a bill that has been worked on since 1988, and Democrats were in charge all the way into 2000 when we Republicans started to work on it some more. So over the years, we have amended, modified this law to make sure that anything that is taught, and it must be, this is in law, and if schools are following laws, then this is a law, 121A.23, that's supposed to happen in all of our districts. But the importance of this statute is that it involves health experts. It has to be scientifically and medically accurate. It has to have involvement from the community. It is very comprehensive when it comes to looking at what parents, teachers, and a community expect. So to deviate from that is not what we should be doing when we have a law in place that is going to serve us very well if districts actually follow it. Another concern that I want to bring up is that sexual assault was mentioned, and we enacted Aaron's Law a few years ago. It's 120B.234. And it also is supposed to be adhered to by our districts. We have, in fact, several sections that address sexual or sexual assault violence. And, you know, we need to go home and make sure that as we interact with our school districts, that they are following the laws. Because why are we passing more laws if they're not followed? That is so important that when we enact a law, it is then honored. And that's what helps our students. That's what helps our students understand that the intent from Democrats to Republicans has always been that we concentrate on sexual risk avoidance. And that's why we have had the study of transmitted diseases as an emphasis, because that has been a growing concern among us, that as children are becoming active sexually, that these diseases are rampant and they are destroying lives. And so, you know, our concentration is on that instead of your bill, which is on sexual risk reduction, which is suggesting that, you know, our children, our older children, I hope, but it's all children, that they're going to be sexually active. And because of that, we have to put in place these reductions.
Representative Erickson, we have just a couple of minutes to get to the roll call. Any final comments?
Well, yes, I guess I've given my final comments. I recommend that my members vote no, that this bill should go no farther than today, and that, you know, we should be focusing on reopening our schools and getting our children back to catch up on all the learning they've lost, including these statutes to which I have referred. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jordan, very briefly, last words before our roll call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will conclude with some of the words we heard from Trinity Hanif, who said that this bill is about leveling the playing field and that knowledge is power. We heard, you know, a number of people asked about parents, a number of people asked about MDE, but we need to return back to our students. I brought this bill forward because our students are begging us to do this. They are begging us for resources on how to avoid sexual assault, and they're also begging us to teach their fellow classmates to stop perpetuating sexual assault. Our students are begging us for information about their bodies. They're begging us to know that they are loved and that they matter and that they shouldn't feel ashamed of who they are. So I'm asking members to think about that and to listen to the students. Not only did we hear from a number of incredibly well-spoken young people today, we also—
Representative Jordan, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
Anyway, thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present this bill. I hope you'll listen to students when you're making your vote today.
Rep. Jordan renews her motion to re-refer House File 358 as amended to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
No.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Yes.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Ertl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Yes.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
The motion prevails, and Rep. Jordan, you are on your way. We now stand adjourned.